This is Cashing Out on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Back at it on Cashing Out. I'm Dustin Sweetelson. It's VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, broadcasting as always, SiriusXM Channel 158, YouTube TV, and the VSiN Watch app. A lot to get to with our next guest. Looking at VSiN.com/picks, that's where you can find all of his write-ups. He's our senior editor. Zach Cohen's going to join us now. And I'm seeing he had his NBA picks up early. You could have checked them out. He had player props available, previewed Monday Night Football. All that good stuff is always there. Zach's always churning out the content. We appreciate him making time for us each and every Monday night here on Cashing Out. So let's start by looking at this NBA game that's still going on. Lakers and the Suns. Phoenix is up 98-81. Suns are laying 11.5 in game. Totals 227.5. As Dylan Brooks is going nuts, he has 33 points. We went in-game under 35.5. That looks like a big fat loser. Not myself, the bet. And then LeBron James only has 6 points in this game, and we're in the fourth quarter. Talk to me about what you're seeing. First Dylan Brooks, then and LeBron James.
Yeah, I mean, so Devin Booker got injured in this game, hurt his groin, probably not going to be something he's going to come back from very soon. So definitely bad for the long-term outlook of the Suns, but it has definitely fueled Dylan Brooks, who always really likes to play against LeBron James. And now he's doing it, you know, in that shiny, gorgeous court of theirs in LA. And I think he's just kind of fueled by hate right now. He's making some awesome moves that you really never see from Dylan Brooks. His footwork looks amazing, kind of out of nowhere. And just, yeah, it's not a guy that you normally see in that Brooks jersey. So it's definitely a really unique scenario right now.
Yeah, not a great bet by me. But what about LeBron? Like, you've watched him more than I have as our NBA guy, Harvard Handicappers is the podcast. How has LeBron been acclimating into this Lakers rotation?
He's looked really good because he has been taking a back seat to both Reeves and Luka, who are both obviously having amazing seasons. I mean, Luka is a top five player in the league, a definite MVP candidate, and Austin Reeves is, you know, maybe the front runner for MIP right now. I mean, he's kind of made a really strong push for that just because he has looked like a, you know, surefire all-star this season. And you generally do see that award go to someone that makes the all-star leap. So I actually commend LeBron for the way that he's just kind of fit in this season. He hasn't really tried to make it about him, but I am a little concerned about what I've seen from LeBron in terms of his jumper. Like, something looks really off about it, just mechanics wise to me. Like, there's been a lot of like weird, like herky jerky body movements in the lower body. Almost looks a little bit like Charles Barkley's golf swing. And I haven't really seen a lot of people talking about it right now, but this is a guy that's normally a really reliable 3-point shooter. And that part of his game is definitely looking a little scary to me. That's the first thing I have noticed when watching him.
Zach Cohen's with us, VSiN senior editor at Betting on X on X. 16-1, Austin Reeves, most improved player. Is that a number that intrigues you based on what you just said?
Yeah, so I actually didn't even have this on my radar a couple of days ago, and then I saw Drew Dinsick talk about it on a numbers game with Gil Alexander, and then I went and dove into it myself, and I gave it out at 35-1. I took it at 35-1 a couple of days ago on Hardwood Handicappers. I still think it's a value up until 15-1, just because I do think that it is very much him as part of that conversation. I think that a lot of people kind of early on in the year said that it's either Josh Giddey or Jalen Duren. Duren is making a very similar leap to the one we're seeing out of Austin Reeves. So it would be a very worthy contender right there in Detroit. But I do think that Reeves is going to be a big part of this conversation moving forward. He's just been so good, you know, knocking down shots, you know, off the dribble, knocking down open threes, and just kind of creating offense for this team. We saw it when Luka went out that he looked like he could be the primary engine for a winning team. But now he's really fitting in well with Luka and just playing very well alongside him.
All right, one more NBA question. We'll get to the NFL. We'll get to the college football with the conference title games. But I'm looking at the rookie of the year market right now. Cooper Flagg's the favorite at -120. Konkanepal plus $1.25 is having a monster season. Derek Queen, 16-1, which is a big jump, but he's been playing great. I know a guy I think you are high on. Ace Bailey is 100-1. I bet him 80-1. And I know he missed some time with an injury. Is there enough time for Ace Bailey to get back into this race at that big number?
I don't think so, because I do think he needs to average 16 or 17 points per game. Part of me wants to sprinkle on Bailey just to make my overall number better than the one I took before the season, because I got like 15-1. I would feel better saying I have total of like 50-1. But I do think this is going to end up being Flagg's award. I think that Flagg has really come on strong over the last week or so, and like just the way that he looks when you're looking at the eye test, it looks like a borderline all-star to me. He's just been so smooth, kind of knocking down his mid-range jumper. I think he's really starting to, you know, adjust to the space that he's playing with in the NBA. He always played with kind of a packed court at Duke, which is crazy because that team did have floor spacing. I mean, Knipple was his teammate, and that's one of the best three-point shooters in the nation, and now one of the best three-point shooters in the world. But I think that Flagg is really starting to thrive with the NBA game, and I think that he's going to have a huge role in that Dallas offense moving forward. And I just kind of think he's going to nudge ahead of Knipple over the next couple of weeks. And I actually think that that's a play right now at minus 120. So if that's the number that you are seeing at the moment, I think I'd play that at anything up to minus 150. And I think that that number could grow for me if he just continues to kind of keep up what we've seen over the last couple of weeks. And also Ryan Nemhard has been awesome playing alongside him as the now starting point guard for Dallas.
Chatting with our buddy Zach Cohen, VSiN senior editor. Find him on X at Betting on X. Let's go to college football. Conference title games. You have one official play, and this one's coming down now. Indiana and Ohio State at Lucas Oil Stadium. You'd want to think the Hoosiers in their own state would have some sort of home field advantage. I don't know if they will, but I'm with you. I think that number's too big. I'm not sure how good Ohio State is, and I think maybe the Hoosiers are being undervalued. It's down from 5.5 to 4.5. Total still 48.5. Would you still consider it at 4.5?
Yeah, I would still consider it at 4.5. I'd still consider it at 3.5. I think that, you know, you just said it. I'm not sure Indiana's going to have a home field advantage. I really didn't even factor that in much when I was handicapping this game, because we actually saw Ohio State with a pretty good turnout in the Big House last week. Like, those fans are going to find a way to get there. They're going to support that team. But I'm with you. Like, I don't think that I see this completely dominant Buckeyes team that everybody else is seeing. Like, I don't not seen enough from this Ohio State team to say that they are definitively the best team in college football. They've been good when I have watched them, but I do think that Julian Sayin has a little bit more to prove at the quarterback position. I just kind of think that Indiana, with how efficient they are on early downs, how good they are on both sides of the ball, how well coached they are, I think that coming off of last week, they're in pretty good shape in this game, because I do think that playing against Purdue in a game where they absolutely rolled to a win was just kind of an easy week for them, one where they can kind of look ahead to this spot in the calendar. I don't think that Ohio State had that luxury. I think that they played maybe their Super Bowl for the season last week. I mean, you heard it last year when they lost to Michigan. There were so many fans, including our own Alan Burke, that, you know, did not care if they won the national championship. They were really pissed that they lost that Michigan game. So that was a huge game for them. This is almost a letdown spot for them playing in the Big Ten championship game. And I do think Indiana's almost as talented as they are, or at the very least as well coached. And I do think that Mendoza is the best quarterback in this game. So that is a small edge to me to the Hoosiers. And I do think that the scenario calls for a very close game and possibly an Indiana win. I think this game means a lot more to the Hoosiers.
Okay, based on everything you just said, because I'm not sure what Mendoza does statistically in this matchup. And I'm with you. I'm not buying the Saiyan talk. Quickly, let's talk Heisman Trophy. Mendoza's plus 160, Saiyan's plus 170. I'm seeing Pavia between like 2 and 3 to 1, depending where you shop. Jeremiah Love's up to 30 to 1. If that game's lackluster and Mendoza and Saiyan don't really take the award, do you think Pavia and Love have a shot here?
Yeah, I actually think Pavia's going to win. Like he's the most like Heisman-worthy player in terms of just remarkable plays, putting a team on his back. We don't really have that this season. Like, he's the only one doing it. I mean, I think that Mendoza and Saiyan are both really good, like, button pressers at the quarterback position, where, like, they do everything that the coach asks them. They get the ball out quickly to their receivers. They do everything right, but they don't do anything spectacular. Pavia is putting that team on his back. He's coming up with the big runs. He's coming up with the big throws. He has taken a program that no one expected to be great into just a completely different stratosphere. And now Clark Lee's turning down the Florida job, staying in Vandy, you know, recruiting the number one quarterback in the entire class. Like, I think Pavia deserves to win this award, and I think that he's going to do it.
I have him at 45 to 1, which I bet in the middle of the LSU game when they were winning, right here on Live Bet Saturday on VSiN. So I want Pavia to win. I just think it's like there's no clear-cut winner. It's like a career achievement award for him. And as you pointed out, I don't know if anyone has ever risen the floor of a team more than a floor that he had to raise in Vanderbilt to get it to the level that he's gotten them to, winning on the road at Neyland Stadium this past weekend. Zach Cohen's with us, VSiN senior editor. A lot of ground to cover with him. Just a few minutes to go. Let's go to the NFL. Big boy on Sunday Night Football. Houston going to Kansas City, and the Chiefs are laying 3.5 at Arrowhead, total 41.5. Which direction are you looking there?
I really like Kansas City in this game. I mean, I've been on the wrong side of both these teams over the last few weeks. I've been expecting, you know, the bounce back from the Chiefs. I've been expecting the Texans to kind of tail off a little bit. But I really do think that these last couple of weeks have been a little bit of fool's gold with Houston. Like, I still do not trust that offensive line whatsoever. I don't think that C.J. Stroud is magically a good quarterback all of a sudden. Like, he is a quarterback that I still think we have the same question marks heading into this week as we did, you know, heading into week five or whatever. I think that this Houston offense is still very much shaky. And while the Texans defense is great, this is a must win game for Kansas City. I know that we've been saying that the last couple of weeks, but I do think this is a good matchup for the Chiefs because I think that the defense is going to be able to completely stall that Texans offense. And I think Kansas City scores enough points to cover that small spread at home. We heard Andy Reid kind of mention the importance of this game, and I think they figure out a way to do it.
He's Zach Cohen. You can read all of his articles up at VSiN.com, the NBA previews, the NFL. He's got it all covered for you. Go check it out. Also, Hardwood Handicappers, wherever you get your podcast. Thanks, as always, for doing this, man. We'll chat again in a week.
Thanks, guys.
Awesome stuff from our guy, Zach. Also, we have some awesome stuff from our friends over at ProfitX. ProfitX is giving you an exclusive 20% purchase match up to $100. ProfitX is the number one sports prediction market available in 40-plus states where you can trade your sports opinions just like stocks. On mainlines, player props, parlays, and more, you can even request your own odds, access live markets, and bet yes, no on touchdown scores, passing totals, and game outcomes. Download ProfitX today and experience the future of sports betting. Powered by prediction markets, use promo code VSiN to claim your 20% match up to $100 and get in the action now. When we return, the top stories in the NFL, including quarterback updates and injuries from the weekend.
Welcome back to Cashing Out here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It's Cashing Out, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. I'm Dustin Sweetelson, broadcasting, as always, from the Circus Sportsbook in downtown Las Vegas, Sirius XM Channel 158, YouTube TV, and the VSiN Watch app. 4 minutes to go, Suns and Lakers, 118 to 100. And while we're sweating out this Dylan Brooks under 35.5 points, he's at 33. So right now, with 4 minutes to go, an 18-point lead, a very shallow Suns roster. I would really like to see Phoenix rest their starters the rest of the way because they're going to win this game. They're going to take care of business. They're dealing with an injury to Devin Booker, as Zach informed us during the last segment. Would have been good to know before I placed my bet on the under on Dylan Brooks. But Booker only played 10 minutes, had 11 points, and then injured his groin. I think because of that, I'd like to see Brooks be benched. Unfortunately, when I last looked, we couldn't go over on the prop on anywhere. None of the apps still had it up on the board with so little time remaining in the game. While we were chatting as well, LeBron James did score his 10 points, so that streak will remain. 10 points for him, 31 minutes. Really making an impact, man. Really doing your job in this spot with your team losing 18. I'm a LeBron guy, by the way. I don't know why I'm talking smack, but he is becoming a little insufferable. And I'm really just not sure how this works, personality-wise, skill-wise, when it's clearly Luka Doncic and Austin Reeves' team going forward. And I'd prefer to just watch them run a two-man game back and forth than even think about involving LeBron into this offense. But 4 minutes to go. The number right now in the market. Let me go back. I was looking at the awards when we were talking to Zach for my NBA odds. And it's Phoenix minus 16.5, total 235.5 at 218. I'd lean under there, but I'm not touching that. I need anything but Dylan Brooks scoring three more points in this game, okay? He can get one bucket for Dylan Brooks, and we'll be okay. We'll split those two in-game wagers, and I won't feel as bad about it. So that's where we stand with the NBA. I'll get you updated as soon as this game comes to a close. But right now, do want to go back to the National Football League, and how we do that every single day on the show is with the three-point stance. And we'll begin the three-point stance with the Los Angeles Chargers, because in case you missed it, Justin Herbert injured his hand in Sunday's win, and he had surgery earlier today. And taking care of the Raiders is one thing. Playing with an injured hand that they just cut open to fix, That's going to be an issue going forward. He broke a bone in his hand. And according to Jim Harbaugh, Trey Lance is going to end up getting the first team practice reps in goal line scenarios this week. And I have to imagine in the game, Trey Lance may be used as a runner, as a goal line situational guy, because I don't think they want Justin Herbert taking any hits when it comes to the Los Angeles Chargers. Herbert met with the media earlier today and said this about his injury.
Yeah, I'm treating it as if I'm playing on Monday. I think they're very hopeful for that. So I think that's just something that we'll see tomorrow and we'll get a feel for. But I think they were really hopeful, so that's always a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see how that plays out. Right now for the Chargers, playoff picture-wise, they are sitting in your 5 seed right behind the Ravens. They're 8-4 on the season. They win the tiebreak over Buffalo and Indy based on best win percentage in conference games. And they're looking like a playoff team, so they can't afford Justin Herbert to not be healthy. As far as the matchup this week with Philadelphia goes, you know, this one opened with Philadelphia laying 3, I believe. Where is it at right now? It is 2.5. 2.5. Total is dropped. 43.5 down to 40.5. I like the Eagles. I know they have a lot of issues of their own when it comes to their offense right now. But when you think about the Chargers and what they want to do, I don't know how Kamani Vidal is going to handle those big bodies up front for the Chargers. It's one thing to run up and down against that Raiders front. The Eagles front's a little bit different. Plus Philly coming off an embarrassing loss to Chicago where they're going to adjust things. They're going to get right. I really like Philly, although I keep buying in on Philly and I could be totally wrong about them, but I do think they have a chance to right the ship some. I'm seeing Circa here has them still laying 3, total of 41. But the big picture for Philly is what happens offensively going forward. There was a lot of rumors, a lot of talking that they would make a change with play calling duties. And apparently that's not going to go down because Nick Sirianni came out today and said, Kevin Petullo, their OC, is going to remain the play caller. Quote, we're not changing the play caller. I have confidence in the entire group. I know it will keep coming back to Kevin. If I thought it was one thing, I'd make those changes. Obviously it's a lot of different things. I don't think it's Kevin. Okay. So what do those words mean? Those words can take us down a few different paths. And under the leadership of Nick Sirianni, I do believe he is pretty good at playing the messaging game with the media and the statements he makes. And while I do believe he is linked with Jalen Hurts, and they've been on the same page for a lot, that feels like a shot at Jalen Hurts. Like he wants Jalen Hurts to stop playing his game and play Kevin Petullo and Nick Sirianni's game. That's what I'm hearing there, because when you look at this Eagles offense, I think they're also being hamstrung from the fact that Saquon Barkley is not the explosive athlete he's been for the last few years. Maybe he recaptures that late in the year. Maybe it's next season. But right now, that's not a guy you can rely on. So I think because of that, you have to tweak what you do offensively. And it appears, if I'm reading between the lines correctly there, Nick Sirianni saying that Jalen Hurts isn't adjusting. He's continuing to do what they always did instead of making tweaks to this offense and how he reads a defense, how he looks for his progressions, how he gets everyone else involved. Passing game has gotten better. The problem is, can they be the total package? Can the offense and the defense support each other in a game? I do think going on the road to SoFi, where there will be more Eagles jerseys in the stands than there will be Chargers, I think it's going to feel like a home game for Philly. I like them laying the 2.5. Give me them under a field goal on the road. And then finally, our last story in the three-point stance. That comes out of Indianapolis, where I don't know if you guys saw this watching the game, but it looked pretty scary. The Colts lost Sauce Gardner during their loss to Houston, and it's just a calf injury. He was helped off the field. I swore it was an Achilles. It was an ACL. It was something that was going to be devastating, but according to the reports, Sauce Gardner's only going to miss a few weeks. Where is Indy when it comes to the playoff picture once those weeks are up? I mean, that's up for debate. They're 8-4. They're the 6th seed. They have Jacksonville this week, and I don't really understand why they're road favorites. They're laying 1.5 on the road in Duval. Total is 47.5, 48.5, depending on where you shop. I like the Jaguars, and I don't really love Trevor Lawrence right now, but if Daniel Jones can't move around, if they can't get the run game going, and Jacksonville's pretty good defending the run this year, I think this could be a tough spot for the Colts back-to-back weeks in division. Houston last week on the road in Jacksonville. And Sauce Gardner not being in the mix, that also hurts their chances because of what they invested, a first-round pick, in bringing him over to help take them over the top. make that playoff push, look to be a top seed and be a scary force defensively in the postseason, all of a sudden the defense goes back to being what it's been without the addition of Sauce Gardner. I really like Jacksonville in this spot. I don't know if I'll get there and actually bet it, but I think it's a really good matchup for Jacksonville with everything going on right now. So that's where we stand with the top stories in the NFL. And when it comes to the top games this week, I think we're all anticipating Houston, Kansas City being a barn burner. Right now, we've got the Chiefs laying 3.5 at Arrowhead. Total is 41.5, and Andy Reid understands what's on the line. As Kansas City comes into this game, they're 6-6 on the season. 500, they can't afford many losses, and Andy Reid acknowledged that when he met with reporters.
Yeah, well, I believe that. I mean, I believe you come, if you're coming to me on this, Matt, I'm telling you, we're going to go after you every game. And, you know, that's how we roll. We're going to try to tickle your tonsils on every play, every game. And, but that's the attitude that we're coming in with. And then you let the chips fall where they may. But at the same time, you got to make sure you take care of the small things here that we've got rolling. We've got to make sure that we get rid of some of these mistakes. But there's not a game that I go into that I don't think we're going to get after you.
Yo, he just said tickle their tonsils. I said that to a girl in summer camp and got suspended for a week that I wanted to tickle her tonsils. What a saying from Andy Reid. I love, though, that he's willing just to say it. I just believe we're going to go out there. We're going to take care of business. We're going to win these games. That's what I want to hear. I don't want diplomatic statements from my head coach. I want belief. I want you to say we got this. I know we haven't looked great. We've had moments. We've had moments where we look like the old Chiefs. Right now, when it comes to Kansas City and the AFC, you can get them 9.5-1 to win the AFC. In terms of Super Bowl odds, they're 18-1. Oh, that's enticing, man. You know, they were as high as 15-1 earlier in the year, and I regretted not betting that when they looked like they recaptured their form. Now, since then, I can get a better number, but there's more desperation for them. I don't know if I'm willing to do that, because when it comes to Kansas City's schedule, they've got Houston this week. After Houston for Kansas City, it's the Chargers in division, at the Titans, looking for the Broncos and the Raiders. Oh, God. I think they can definitely win this week. I don't know if they will, but they can. They have the Chargers after that. That should be a win. I think they're better than LA right now, despite the record. At the Titans, that's a win. Revenge against the Broncos. I think I like the way that shapes up at Arrowhead. And then at the Raiders. I mean, that's a slam dunk win. I'm considering the 18-1 to win the Super Bowl. So that's where we stand when it comes to the National Football League. We'll do an early preview of Thursday Night Football coming up later. But when we return, Jeff Erickson shares his best plays for Week 14.
Welcome back to Cashing Out here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Dustin Sweetelson here at the Circa Sportsbook in downtown Las Vegas, SiriusXM 158, YouTube TV, the VSiN Watch app, radio affiliates across the United States of God Bless America. In case you missed it, Monday Night Football has come and gone, and you didn't miss much if you wanted to tune in for a game. The New England Patriots pick up the dub, 33-15. They cover the 7 points. We go over the total of 46.5 as they move to 11-2 on the season. Drake May is now your favorite. Odds on at -$1.25 to be the most valuable player, and the Patriots are the one seed in the AFC. To help us digest all of that information and preview Week 14, we'll now go to the Progressive guest line, welcoming Jeff Erickson, RotoWire senior editor, at Jeff_Erickson on X, and he joins us now on Cashing Out. Talk to me about Monday Night Football. My Giants didn't have much to offer in terms of entertainment value. The Patriots just kind of did what they had to do. It didn't look sloppy. They took care of business. When you look at May being the favorite for MVP over Stafford and others, do you think that's correct right now?
No, I don't. I think Stafford should still be the favorite. But we got plenty of time for that to change too, right? You know, especially May's going to be on bye next week. There'll be one less chance for him to display his wares. If the Rams end up being the number one seed in the NFC, I think Stafford wins. If Seattle passes the Rams, God forbid the Bears somehow hold on to that number one spot, then sure. Okay, let's talk May. But, you know, the Bears are that They can't keep getting away with the team. Oh, they got away with it again, team. And they actually looked, they actually earned it this time too, is the funny thing.
Yeah, I'm getting a lot of tweets from Bears fans that are annoyed at me because I keep saying, I don't know. You want me to react to what the Bears are? I don't know. Have they done what they needed to do? Have they won 9 games? I'll absolutely give them credit for that. Do I think they're a scary team? Maybe. And it's only because of Ben Johnson. And it's not like the offense has been crazy, but I do think in the vacuum of one game, Chicago, because they have that mastermind calling the plays, they're a dangerous team. Here's what I'll ask you. Chicago's your one seed in the NFC. It's a crazy thing to say. They're the one seed in the NFC, and Chicago's 15-1 to win the NFC. In the AFC, the Broncos are the second in the standings, two seed, and they're plus 425 to win the AFC. Who do you trust more, Denver or Chicago right now?
Denver, even though I have a lot of reservations about Bo Nix, I mean, we saw in the Sunday night game just the horrible interception he threw that kept the Commanders in that game. The Denver should have pulled away in that game, and instead we got the game. You know, we got a game last night that was worth watching, albeit a little long, that dragged out for a while there. But tonight it was the opposite. It was just that was just killed and it was over with there. But I trust Denver just because I think they have the best unit of the four. They've got that defense. Sertan's healthy again. I understand I was a little disappointed in that defense last night against the Commanders. A couple things went, you know, they had some unlucky breaks. You know, the kickoff shenanigans, they should have recovered a fumble mixed in there. There were some penalties that went against them. There's a couple things that kind of went against them there that they could have, you know, broken away a little bit sooner too. But I think they have, of the four units, the Bears offense, Bears defense, Broncos offense, Broncos defense is the best of those four units. I trust them the most. They have a little taste of experience. It wasn't good experience in the playoffs, but it's still a taste. I think they'll be better equipped. And the Bears, I think it's silly to debate this now too, just because the Bears' schedule is nasty the rest of the way.
Yeah.
I expect them to kind of fall back.
Yeah, they're finally going to get tested. Jeff Erickson's with us, RotoWire senior editor, VSiN contributor, at Jeff_Erickson on X. Let's shift gears, look to week 14, where all of a sudden this Thursday night football game is like winner goes, loser goes home. Detroit hosting Dallas. Lions lane 3.
Yeah.
Totals 53.5. How do you want to attack this game?
I like the under in this one here. I'm worried about the Lions' interior offensive line, especially now that we know that Frank Ragnow is not rejoining the team. Somehow didn't notice that he had a grade 3 hamstring tear. I mean, I know he's known for playing through things, but that's kind of crazy. He did know that he had something with his hamstring, just to be clear. It wasn't like this was totally out of the blue, but the degree to that injury, it's kind of crazy. Failed that physical. He's not walking through that door anytime soon. Dave Remington's not walking through that door anytime soon. Mike Webster's not walking through that door anytime soon. No other historic centers are walking through that door. Their current offensive line has two other injuries right now. Meanwhile, Dallas, all of a sudden, they have a pass rush. We can mock everything about Jerry, and you should, for the way he handled the Micah Parsons situation. Getting Quinnen Williams was a game changer. Getting Overshown back at the same time was a game changer. This is a team that was in Patrick Mahomes' face on Thanksgiving. Mahomes still found a way to put up 28. That's the crazy thing about that. But seriously, this Dallas defense is actually not a turnstile anymore. I don't think Detroit's going to pile it up. They might not have Amon-Ra St. Brown in this game. We'll see. He didn't practice today. Short turnaround here with the Thursday game. I think this is a real concerning spot. You know, I don't really want to say Dan Campbell's lost his mojo or anything. I just think this Lions team is not functioning as a whole right now, and I don't think they're going to put up the 30 burger that we always expect them to do at home. I think this is going to be a lower scoring game. So give me the under 53.5. I set this total at like 49.5 when I did my first guesses.
Yeah, I'm just curious from a fantasy perspective, also player props coming out over the course of the next like 24 hours or so. I'm seeing passing prop up for Dak, 264. It's a big number, but I kind of like it with all the injuries in the secondary to Detroit. I mean, Jameis Winston threw for 300 yards against this Lions defense at Ford Field. I feel like Dak should be able to do the same. But with Amon-Ra St. Brown probably not going to give it a go coming off that injury, I'm guessing he's not going to play. Do you think Jameson Williams against that secondary for Dallas could go off here?
I mean, he could, or he could totally disappoint and go 2-15 because that's what he does. I keep picking on him, but I should probably drop it. Oh, wait, too late. That drop on Thanksgiving was a killer drop. And I know the throw is behind him, but come on, you're a professional receiver. You got to catch that ball, period, and stop. And, He could really go off, but will Goff have the time? Will Dallas devise a pass rush that can blow him up through over the middle? Yes, Quinnen Williams will be doing that. That's where I think this is really going to be interesting to see what they can do to adjust to that there. How can they free up Gibbs while they're at it too? Gibbs, he can pick on the Giants. He can pick on bad run defense like the Commanders. The Cowboys, we'll see about that. I'm not as sure that he'll be able to do that there. So it's really a conundrum for them to see how they can get around all these injuries on their offensive line.
Yeah, if this was a few weeks ago, I would have been all over Gibbs. I believe it's 74 and a half rush yards right now against this team. This team's stopping the run. Now, some of that is some of the opponents, but I do think they're beefed up and better at doing so. Gibbs may have to be a pass catcher to be effective as that number two option for Goff. Chatting with Jeff Erickson, RotoWire senior editor at Jeff_Erickson on X. Let's go to the other games on Sunday. Indianapolis is going to Jacksonville. Circa actually has the Colts up to -2. Totals from 48 down to 47 and a half right now. And I'm with you. I think the Jags are the play. Tell the audience why we like Jacksonville.
Well, it starts with a concern about the Colts, and it's Daniel Jones's fibula. He is not nearly as mobile. You know, you notice he wasn't taking the snaps on quarterback sneaks and fourth down. Instead, they did the Tyler Warren play. If we can ban the tight end tush push, it would be unfair to Mark Andrews, but I can get behind that because there's so many fails with that right now. We saw Cade Stover in the same game run that play twice in a row, and it didn't work. This is a novelty I don't like to see, but the Colts, they had that fumble on the snap there. It's just Harold Fannin messed it up too against the Niners. Maybe not messed it up, but point is, it's just not an optimal play. And the Colts were so good on fourth down before that. Early in the season, the Colts were nailing fourth downs. Even the game against Pittsburgh that they lost, they were like, their quarterback sneaks on fourth down were amazing. They can't do that right now with Jones. And it limits his ability to scramble outside the pocket. He can't evade the pass rush as well. You know, I think, you know, Hines Allen is going to have a day against the Colts here. The Colts offensive line is not the strength that it was earlier in the season too, maybe because they're a little less, you know, less three-dimensional right now. And I think Jacksonville should be favored in this one. I love them as a home dog.
Jeff, you are a brave man when I look at your last play for this week. Not because I think you're wrong. I think you're on the right side. It's that you're going to subject your eyeballs to watching the Titans and the Browns this week, where Cleveland,
let's roll around the mud, man.
Cleveland is somehow laying 4.5 and the total is 33.5. And that feels a little bit high. Talk to me about the Titans in this spot.
You mean you want to give me points against Shedeur Sanders?
Sure. Yeah, I agree.
Okay, let's go. No. And honestly, Cleveland should be favored. It should be like the standard 2.5. I feel like, Cleveland, Myles Garrett is easily the best player on the field in this game. And Tennessee is just an utter total dumpster fire. They got a decent enough defense. They could, let's get weird. This is going to be an ugly, ugly game. You're hoping for like DK to have a kick return or a punt return for a touchdown. That's your path, getting there. But I just, or Shedeur just turning it over a lot. Cleveland failing offensively. Jerry Judy dropping balls left and right. It's not that hard to envision that.
No. It's not. He's Jeff Erickson. Find him over at rotowire.com. Across the network here is a VEASAN contributor at Jeff_Erickson on X. Thanks as always for doing this, my friend. Good luck with the bets. We'll chat again next week.
All right. Take care, Dustin.
Hey, you can make the holidays unforgettable with Omaha Steaks. From holiday roast to hand-selected gift packages, Omaha Steaks delivers top-quality meals and memorable gifts that bring everyone together. Every steak perfectly aged, hand-carved for exceptional flavor. And right now, a VEASAN exclusive. You'll get 16 free smash burgers with any order of $129 or more, plus 50% off site-wide. Visit omahasteaks.com/VEASAN. That's omahasteaks.com/VSIN. Drake May's the favorite for MVP, but should he be?
Welcome back to Cashing Out here on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Dustin Sweetelson here, you there, and I appreciate you hanging out with me all night long on Cashing Out, VEASAN, the Sports Betting Network. Just a reminder, in case you missed any part of the program, whether it was the three-point stance, looking at the top stories in the NFL, like, love, and loathe, recapping the weekend of action, or our conversations, Zachary Cohen, Jeff Erickson, all that's available wherever you get your podcast, and it's totally free. Also, you can check us out in the VEASAN Watch app as well. And in case you missed it, Monday Night Football has come and gone. It was a 33-15 win for the New England Patriots as they dominated the Giants every single which way. Drake May, 24 of 31 in the game, 282 yards, two touchdowns through the air. And with that, when you look at the betting market, he became your odds-on favorite to win most valuable player. It now sits Drake May minus $1.35, Matthew Stafford plus 125, Dak Prescott 15-1, Jordan Love 19-1, Josh Allen 25-1, and it gets way bigger from there. It does appear it is a two-man race. I'll make the case for Dak Prescott a little bit later in the week. I think at 15-1, there's a chance he gets into this conversation, but he needs his team to help him out. He needs the results. He needs to sneak into the playoffs because outside of Matthew Stafford, I think when you watch someone play the quarterback position, Dak Prescott's like right on the heels of Matthew Stafford of playing it at like the top tier level right now. And I'm not knocking Drake May. I understand why he's the favorite in this market, but if you're going to bet anything right now, you can't lay that number. I don't love taking plus $1.25 with Matthew Stafford, but I still think he ends up winning this award. For starters, he's got better touchdown numbers than May, and I think that matters to the voters. It's a very simple thing to look at here if we're going to compare stats. The ending up with points, resulting in points for your team, I think that plays a major role here in the most valuable player award, especially in a season where there really isn't a clear-cut runaway number one outside of, to me, Stafford. I think Stafford is, but I'm also biased. I have Stafford at 55-1, and I'll always acknowledge that when I have a ticket on something and I'm trying to make the case for it or against it in some spots, I'll let you know. And while I am biased here, I appreciate what May's doing, but if we're going to look at this award, and I get in trouble all the time with this award on the other end, I try to convince myself most valuable player, value matters, right? It's not about best player. They named it that for a reason. They named it most valuable player for a reason. But I've been wrong about that in every sport. It doesn't go to that. It goes to the best player. So if we're going to talk about the best player at the hardest position to play, which is quarterback, Matthew Stafford has to be the guy. And I think he's going to end up running away with it and cementing his case going forward. So for Drake May, as he's minus $1.35, he unfortunately can't capitalize on that momentum because he has a bye this week. And the Patriots with a week 14 bye, latest in football, that's going to hurt him and what he's doing right now. 21 touchdowns, 6 interceptions through the air for May, 3,100 yards, which is third in football, his fourth best QBR in the league at this point in time, just 23 touchdowns, I should say, didn't count the two from today, 6 interceptions. He has run for two as well, but with a bye coming up and only having 4 opportunities where Stafford's going to have 5, listen to these matchups going forward for each of these guys. Drake May has Buffalo off the bye. That is the number one pass defense in the league. Now, last time against Buffalo, he did throw for 273 yards, but he didn't throw or run for a touchdown in that game, even though the Patriots won 23-30. And Buffalo will be out for revenge. That game will be played in Western New York. I don't know if May has an easy time, even though they're coming off the bye. After that, they go to Baltimore. Baltimore's been pretty bad defending the past 26, but you go back and look over their last three, only allowing 185.7 through the air. So it's been an improvement. It's gotten better. They've gotten healthier. I think May could end up having a decent day there, but maybe not as good as it would have been had he faced them earlier in the season. After Baltimore, they go to the Jets. Jets number 10. Defense has gotten worse. We'll see how that one goes, but it's on the road in New Jersey at the Jets. I don't know if it'll be as easy, but he could end up having a solid day. And then they finish versus Miami at home in Foxborough. They should win that game. The win-loss record will be in Drake May's favor, I think, to make his case for MVP. But this award isn't about the quarterback on the team with the best record. That's not what this award is for. It's about the dude who elevates the game, who's playing at a high level, and the eyeball test has to matter. Oh, man, I sound like the College Football Playoff Committee right now. I'm not going to hold the losses against Stafford, but I will hold them against May. No, I'm not going to do that. And the loss for Stafford and company over the weekend was bad, but kind of due for a mulligan at the level they were playing at for so long. They'll get back on track, and by the way, from passing defenses they're going to face, Stafford has a really good opportunity here. They're at Arizona, 21st defending the pass. After that, Detroit, who's 17th, but over their last three, allowing 251 yards per game through the air, plus Terrion Arnold just went on IR. They're dealing with a bunch of injuries on their defense. Can't really get a push. And I think Stafford will have plenty of time to throw against his former team, and that game will be at home. Then they go to Seattle. That's not going to be easy. Seattle's secondary is awesome. That's going to be a tough one for Matthew Stafford. Last time out against the Seahawks, he went 15 of 28, 130 yards, did throw two touchdowns, though. Then after that, LA is going to Atlanta. Atlanta's actually eighth defending the pass, but they're a bad team overall. And that game's going to be played indoors, so there's no advantage for Atlanta there in that regard. And the Bowman injury, I think, in the secondary for the Falcons is going to be big because of how he's played as a rookie. It won't be easy for Stafford. It's not the easiest matchup, but I think he'll take care of business because I think at that point in the year, week 17, I don't know what the Falcons are playing for at that point. And then finally, the Rams close out with Arizona again, 21st passing defense. There is a chance Stafford goes out with a bang, puts up monster numbers. And right now with him having thrown 32 touchdowns, first in the league, four interceptions, 3,000 yards already, I think the stats are going to be there. Plus, factor in Kyren Williams. Injured his ankle over the weekend. It sounds like he's going to be okay, but they really aren't relying on that run game. It's mostly Stafford making everything happen. And if the Rams still are competitive, have a chance at the NFC one seed, it's all going in Stafford's favor because on top of the stats, he's going to have the team success. Whereas for May, I think he's benefiting from a lot of the team success against an easy schedule. Oh, Chris Massaro is about to text me, professional handicapper. Whenever someone says that on the network, you get a text message from Massaro, who I'll have to have on the show again in a couple weeks. But I just think Stafford's the better player right now. That's all. That's why I think he's going to end up being the MVP. And he's got some better matchups the rest of the way with one more game to play. So plus 125, I wouldn't bet it. But if you were wanting to bet something in the MVP market, Stafford is the only direction I'm looking right now. It's Cashing Out, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. I'm Dustin Sweetelson. And speaking of Stafford and company, it was a bad loss for them over the weekend. They got taken to the woodshed, it feels like, by Carolina. Even though the score was close in the end, Carolina felt like they dominated. Offensively, they were efficient. Defensively, especially early on, they put the Rams on their heels. And Bryce Young met with the media after the win and talked about beating one of the top seeds in the NFC.
We know we have what it takes in this building. And, you know, we don't worry about the outside opinions. So for all of us, like you said, short week, holidays, all that, everyone was super locked in all week. You know, this was there's a lot of focus. Everyone was excited for the moment, excited to go out there and play. And, you know, we were excited just, you know, as coach says, because it was the next game. You know, we were just excited for the opportunity. I'm so proud of this team, how they pulled it off, the way we won, both sides of the ball, all three phases. This is a great win. So super proud.
Yeah, look, about a week ago here on the show, coming off primetime where he looked awful against San Francisco, I said Bryce Young wasn't an NFL starting quarterback. I may be wrong about that. I'll fully admit that. Like, I'll own up. I didn't think there was much there. And I didn't think there was going to be a way to squeeze all the talent out of him. I would add, though, you go back and look. Carolina, I think, is 4-0-1 against the spread, or 4-1-0 against the spread as a home underdog this year. He's a totally different quarterback at home versus on the road. But at the same time, you win the games in front of you. And right now, Carolina's won more games than they've lost. They're 7-6 straight up on the season. And the schedule the rest of the way, they control their own destiny. In the NFC South, Tampa Bay's minus 450. Carolina is plus 360. They're going to New Orleans after their bye this week. Then they have Tampa Bay, Seattle, and Tampa Bay again. They get the benefit of hosting the Bucs first, whereas I just mentioned, they're better at home than they are on the road. There is very much a world where the Carolina Panthers win the NFC South. And with that, that is why I bet last night, Dave Canales 30-1 to be the coach of the year. When you think about everything that's gone into this season, right? Bryce Young, we all want to give up on him. We haven't seen what we thought that we could potentially see from him when he was taken number one overall. And then this team was kind of left for dead in this division. They weren't talked about. They weren't hyped up. There was thought that Atlanta, with Michael Penix taking over, could be the one to push Tampa. What if it's not even pushing Tampa? What if it's stealing this division from the Buccaneers? If Carolina does that, I do think there is a case to be made for Canales, because I'd argue he's doing more with less than Vrabel has to work with in New England. While Vrabel's doing an awesome job and deserves to be the favorite for coach of the year, I'm not sure the rosters are comparable, especially the quarterback when it comes to talent, Bryce Young versus Drake May. I think Vrabel wins this award, but I think Canales is going to have a very strong case, which is just why I took 30-1 to be the coach of the year. We've got a great Tuesday slate coming in college hoops. with a bunch of premier programs matching up. Casey Jacobson, Fox analyst, is going to join us to preview those games on the other side of Cashing Out.